Families of hostages still held in Gaza praying there will finally be a ceasefire deal as renewed talks ended for a second day on a positive note.
That I am just so scared that it's going to break up and that Keith won't come home and the hostages won't come home. I'm waiting. I want to keep my hope, because that's the only thing that I can keep.
Ukrainian troops continue to advance farther into Russian territory.
War has been started by Putin and by Russia, so now we see that war is also directly influencing what happens in Ukraine. And Ukraine has absolutely every right to defend its territory, to defend its people, also by striking in Russian territory.
Plus, another confirmed case of the mpox virus has been reported outside of Africa. And Paris is gearing up to host the Paralympics. Today is Friday, August 16th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Mediators wrapped up 2 days of Gaza war ceasefire talks in Doha on a positive note Friday. They presented both parties with a proposal and are aiming to reconvene in Cairo next week to continue working on details of the implementation. President Joe Biden, speaking with reporters, conveyed cautious optimism.
We are closer than we've ever been. I don't want to jinx anything, but as my grandfather said, with the grace of God, good little neighbors, a lot of luck, we may have something. But we're not there yet. But it's much, much closer than it was 3 days ago. So keep your fingers crossed.
And adding to the sense of urgency for a ceasefire, the United Nations says it's poised to launch a polio vaccine campaign in Gaza for more than 340,000 children under the age of 10.
In recent weeks, the polio virus has been detected in wastewater samples in Khan Yunis and Deir al-Bala. That means the virus is now circulated with hundreds of thousands of children in Gaza at risk.
But UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said it will take a massive, coordinated, and urgent effort.
I am appealing to all parties to provide concrete assurances right away, guaranteeing humanitarian pauses for the campaign. Let's be clear. The ultimate vaccine for polio is peace and an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. But in any case, a polio pause is a must. It is impossible to conduct a polio vaccination campaign with war raging all over.
Meanwhile, many in Israel say ceasefire negotiations in Doha might be the last chance for a deal that would bring home the hostages still being held by Hamas. We hear more from Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
Together with 240 Israelis and foreign citizens, Aviva and Keith Siegel were kidnapped by Hamas on October 7th and taken to Gaza. After 51 days, Aviva was released as part of a ceasefire deal, but her husband Keith, a U.S. citizen, is still being held in Gaza. Aviva Siegel says she is praying that the talks in Doha succeed.
There's a deal on the table, and I just want to tell you that I am just so scared that it's going to break up and that Keith won't come home and the hostages won't come home. I'm waiting. I want to keep my hope, because that's the only thing that I can keep.
The last sign of life from Keith Siegel was in a Hamas-made video from April. Israeli sources say that 41 of the remaining 115 hostages have been killed, although the number may be higher. Israeli analysts say this round of ceasefire talks is crucial. Eyal Zisser is a Middle East expert at Tel Aviv University.
On the one hand, there are huge expectations that this round of talks will lead eventually to the end of the war in Gaza and maybe will support the efforts to avoid further escalation in the northern border of Israel and vis-a-vis Iran.
The talks come 2 weeks after Israel assassinated a senior Hezbollah official in Beirut and allegedly killed Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh in Iran. Both Iran and Hezbollah threatened to retaliate, and a ceasefire deal with Hamas and its leader Yahya Sinwar could be the only thing standing in the way of an attack on Israel. Israeli military experts say the deal may be impossible to achieve because of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's relatively new insistence on maintaining a permanent military presence on the border between Gaza and Egypt. Michael Milstein spent three decades as a senior intelligence official in the Israeli army.
From Hamas' point of view, particularly Sinwar's point of view, this is a red line, authentic red line. I assess that he will never accept this demand, and that he will even prefer to die or to continue the fighting and not to accept such a condition. So right now, I must admit that I see no compromise or any kind of bridge between the two banks of this problem.
The hostage families and the Israeli public are following the talks closely, hoping for a breakthrough. All they want and all they've wanted for the past 10 months is for their relatives to come home. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Local authorities in Russia's Kursk region continued evacuating residents from their homes on Friday. The evacuation order on Thursday suggests Ukrainian forces were gradually advancing deeper into Russian territory. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze spoke with Andriy Spruds, Minister of Defense of the Republic of Latvia, who gave his reaction on the Ukrainian military's bold new efforts.
You just said that Ukraine should win the war on the territory of Ukraine. Ukraine moved to territory of Russia. And now, right now, Ukraine is fighting and already taking, as the Ukrainian official said, over 1,000 kilometers of Russian territory and so on. How do you envision the Ukraine winning this war?
Exactly. I think now what we see that war has come home to some extent. War has been started by Putin and by Russia. So now we see that war is also directly influencing what happens in Ukraine. And Ukraine has absolutely every right to defend its territory, defend its people, also by striking in Russian territories. This has been also very clear Latvia's position, including my own. So that's why, of course, these are absolutely legitimate activities that in a war of self-defense, in a war of for freedom and fighting for its integrity, Ukrainians and Ukraine has a right also to strike Russian territory. And I think this is exactly reminding to Russia that there is element of self-destruction. I said it at the beginning that actually Putin started the pregnancy of self-destruction. And sooner or later it will come back. So now also what President Zelensky said, exactly, the war has arrived back to where it started from. And here I think this is a very good signal and very important signal that, look, I mean, Russia cannot win this war. Sooner or later, of course, with support of also allies, Ukraine will this war. And I am absolutely confident about it. And it will take as long as it takes, but Ukraine must win this war.
In terms of Russian troop movements, there are reports that Russia are withdrawing some of the troops from Ukraine. Mm-hmm. From your border perspective, how do you see the Russian troops movement because of that operation? Or it didn't affect any movements here around the border with your country?
Of course, certainly there are some movements, and I think it also most likely shows that there is also some shortage and lack and some vulnerabilities on Russian side. Let's not underestimate what Russia is. Let's not underestimate Russia's disregard for human life. Let's not underestimate Russia's aggressiveness. Let's not underestimate as well Russia's willingness, resolve to put everything on some kind of military war industry track. But at the same time, let's not also overestimate it. Russia has its vulnerabilities.
That was Latvia Minister of Defense Andriy Spruds speaking with VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze. A Russian official reported that a series of Ukrainian strikes also wounded at least 7 people and set a shopping center on fire in the Russian-controlled city of Donetsk in eastern Ukraine Friday. This is Ukraine's Air Force said it shot down all 5 Russia-launched drones during an overnight attack. Pakistan's health ministry on Friday confirmed at least 1 case of the mpox virus, days after the World Health Organization declared the recent outbreak of the disease a global public health emergency. VOA's Ayaz Ghul joins us now from Islamabad.
What are you hearing on the ground there, how this is being received and dealt with? What can you tell us?
Well, it seems that it has shaken the authorities here because the kind of steps they have announced, like boosting security at airports, countrywide and at all border entry points clearly suggests that they have detected possibly the contagious form of mpox, although they have not identified the variant in the statement they have issued. But there was a special emergency meeting in Islamabad today at the health ministry. And after that meeting, this confirmation was released to the media and saying that they have already initiated contact tracing for the individual, for the suspected patient, to make sure that any person that has come into contact with this man should also be tested. And obviously they're worried because there are too many Pakistanis working in Gulf countries, because that's what we were told today, that this person arrived this week from a Gulf country. They did not name the country, and there are too many overseas workers, you know, Pakistanis. They work there and then they visit their relatives in Pakistan, and that seems to be the situation, that they want to make sure that these frequent travelers back and forth from the Gulf countries are screened properly and scrutinized.
Are they saying specifically where this person came from or any other details about what their symptoms?
Well, the symptoms, you know, were described as mild symptoms. They did not elaborate on that. And they also are not disclosing the name of the country, because obviously, you know, what we understand from our sources here, that probably this man, I mean, again, it's not confirmed yet, but either it's the United Arab Emirates or the or Saudi Arabia are the two countries from where this man came back. We don't know for sure. This is what the local media and some sources in the district of Mardan, from which this person belongs, are reporting. So, and these are the two countries where millions of Pakistanis are working. But it is interesting to note that we don't have any reports of the presence of this mpox variant in the Middle East or in the Gulf countries as of this moment. So it is still a mystery that if this person has arrived from one of these two countries and is infected by this virus, then that suggests that this virus has already, you know, shown up in these countries.
So what that would probably indicate is the possibility that there are more cases out there that have just not yet been confirmed, and potentially in other countries as well besides Pakistan.
That seems to be the case, because, you know, it's in Pakistan. We know the health infrastructure is not as efficient as it should be, and there may be more people, more cases, but you know, we may find out in the days to come, because it's the country has a population of 245 million. That's quite a huge number, and the district of Mardan is one of those cities. These are congested areas, and, you know, it's quite possible there will be more cases. But as of today, they have confirmed only one.
Correspondent Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad, thank you so much. And as we heard, Sweden on Thursday was the first to report a confirmed case of mpox outside of Africa. Lucy Fielder with Reuters has more on the outbreak.
Our standing recommendations are...
World Health Organization spokesperson Margaret Harris said countries had no need to close borders.
It's about knowing that you have it, knowing what to look for, knowing how to separate each other and to do proper contact tracing, and not being afraid. So there's always a balance, but not being sort of terrified. It's more a matter of shutting down the infection so that those who are most at risk from severe illness, the young, the immunosuppressed, don't get infected.
Mpox, which spreads through close contact, can lead to flu-like symptoms and pus-filled lesions. While it is usually mild, it can kill vulnerable people, including children. The disease has been a public health problem in parts of Africa for decades. A growing outbreak in Congo is the country's worst ever, with 27,000 cases and more than 1,100 deaths since January 2023. Two strains of mpox are now spreading in the country, the endemic form of the virus as well as the new offshoot. This new form of the virus has triggered global concern because it seems to be spreading quickly and little is known about it.
That was Lucy Fielders with Reuters. You're listening to Flashpoint from the Voice of America. I'm Lori London in Washington. African leaders will meet in Zimbabwe on Saturday for a scheduled summit of the 16-nation Southern African Development Community that may very well discuss the rising issue of Mpox outbreaks across the continent. But in the run-up to the event, human rights organizations have called on the alliance to look at the country's human rights situation, including the arrests of opponents that started in mid-June. VOA's Steve Miller narrates this report from Columbus, Ovunga.
Crews have repaired most of the main roads for the first time in years and even built some new ones. But on the ground and in the air, the police and military have intensified their presence in the run-up to the event. Tinase Chinapfukutwa of Zimbabwe's Lawyers for Human Rights says from mid-June until the present, there has been a wave of arrests of about 100 pro-democracy activists nationwide.
Those arrested have been subjected to prolonged detention and incarceration. And much more recently, we witnessed the arrests of four individuals at the Robert Gabriel Mugabe International Airport, who were forced off a plane and detained incommunicado without access to their lawyers. And they were subjected to torture and other inhumane and degrading treatment.
The government-funded Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission said it that it was investigating reports of activists' torture by security state agents. But Home Affairs Minister Kazembe Kazembe says the people were arrested for illegally protesting the long detention of activists arrested in June for reportedly holding an illegal meeting. He also says those detained plan to hold protests at the SADC venue.
It is clear that the organizers seek to provoke a heavy-handed response from government, which they assume would attract global attention. The attempts at rendering the country ungovernable would be met with befitting responses. Let those seeking to create an atmosphere of despondency among peace-loving citizens be warned that such antics will not be tolerated.
The rights organization Human Rights Watch has called on SADC leaders to look at the issues of human rights abuses by Zimbabwean authorities. Idris Nasa is a senior researcher in Human Rights Watch's Africa division.
We are also saying that SADC leaders should speak out against this intensified crackdown on legitimate and peaceful activism. SADC should not be used as reason for Zimbabweans to live in fear, to be bludgeoned. We have seen in the last few days military tanks rolling on the streets of Harare in a very clear case of intimidation of the citizens.
During the summit, Zimbabwe will assume SADC's chairmanship for the first time since the 16-nation bloc became a development community in 1992. SADC aims to alleviate poverty and promote economic growth, good governance, and peace and security in the region. For Columbus, Bavhunga, I'm Steve Miller. VOA News.
The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, recorded the Earth's hottest July in the agency's 175-year history and the 14th consecutive month of record heat. The just-released report comes as the world continues to experience more climate-induced extreme weather events. In western Turkey, firefighters are battling to contain three wind-driven wildfires, while Japan grounded hundreds of flights and advised nearly 10,000 households to evacuate in some areas near Tokyo on Friday as Typhoon Ampil brought heavy rain and strong winds to the region. Thailand's parliament elected its youngest prime minister on Friday, only a day after she was thrust into the spotlight amid an unrelenting power struggle between the country's warring elites. Fiona Jones with Reuters reports.
37-year-old Paytong Tan Shinawat became the youngest ever prime minister of Thailand on Friday. The political newcomer is taking on a host of challenges facing the country, including an unstable political climate and floundering economy.
I decided that it's about time to do something for the country and for the party as well. And I hope that I can do my best to, you know, make the country go forward. That's what I try to do. And right now, of course, today is, I feel very honored and I feel very happy.
Her win comes only a day after she was thrust into the spotlight amid an unrelenting power struggle between the country's warring elites. Paytong Tan sailed through with nearly two-thirds of the House vote. 2 days after her ally, Sreta Tavisin, was dismissed as premier by a constitutional court, which she lamented. Her billionaire family has had history with the role. She's the daughter of ousted and divisive former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawat, and she follows her aunt, Yingluck Shinawat, as the second female Prime Minister. At stake for Pei Tong Tan could be the legacy and political future of her influential family. Their once unstoppable populist juggernaut suffered its first election defeat in over two decades last year and had to do a deal with its bitter enemies in the military to form a government. These hurdles, along with the economy and hostile political climate, are ones she seemingly thinks can be overcome.
That was Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones. And finally, today, with the 2024 Summer Olympics Games wrapped up, Paris is now getting ready to host the Paralympics later this month. More than 4,000 athletes with disabilities, along with tens of thousands of spectators, will attend the events that run from August 28th to September 8th. Olympic authorities have praised the city for the steps it's taken to make them accessible to all, but disability advocates say much more needs to be done across France to change infrastructure and mindsets. Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
Frank Mai is taking a visitor through a slice of his day, getting from his home outside Paris to the eastern part of the city. His local station is handicap accessible, but catching a suburban train known here as the RER isn't easy. Finally, he's on his way.
Quand on parle d'accessibilité, on parle de l'autonomie.
Mai says accessibility means complete autonomy to go from point A to point B. When people say Paris is handicap accessible, he says, they're wrong.
No.
Mai has a degenerative condition called Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease. He's a former Paralympic athlete, winning 4 bronze medals in swimming in the 1988 Summer Games. Now he's battling for access. French authorities have worked to make the 2024 Summer Games accessible to everyone. There are shuttles and taxis specially equipped for wheelchair users. Buses, trams, and some street crossings are designed for people with mobility, hearing, or vision impairments. Paris City Hall says the changes are part of a bigger effort to make Paris greener and more livable.
On est très accessible aujourd'hui, vraiment.
Lamia El Araj is Paris deputy mayor in charge of accessibility. She says the city is very accessible today. There's been enormous progress, even though there are still things to improve.
C'est à nous de continuer ce cheminement-là.
But only one line of Paris's central metro system, which is not managed by the city, is fully accessible. If an elevator breaks down, wheelchair users are stuck, along with others who need it. Mai says when he's pushing for accessibility, it's not just for him, it's for everyone. Mai and other disability advocates say their fight is not just about changing transportation, but also other basics of daily life. Serge Vidaski is Director General of APF France Handicap, an advocacy group.
When we show the laws that we have in France, like for instance in Brussels, among our peers in other countries, they say, oh my God, you have incredible laws in France that we don't have anywhere else. The only issue is that they're not applied.
Beyond applying laws, advocates say, France needs to apply its motto of equality.
On ne considère pas les personnes.
APF France Handicap President Pascal Ribes also uses a wheelchair. She says people don't consider people with disabilities as citizens in their own right. Society has not thought of integrating people with disabilities so they have access to everything, like everyone else. Mai believes France is evolving, but there is a lot more work to do. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
And that ends today's program, but there's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. Until next week, I'm Lori London.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with a 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.